Well, hey, good to see you. Welcome to East Lake. And we're in this series talking about how do you make faith more practical in everyday life. And the backdrop of it is the big idea. If you got your note sheet just right at the very top, we're blessed to be a blessing. And what we've been talking about, sort of we set the backdrop last week, is why is it when I get more and more in my life, it still doesn't seem to satisfy me? I get the new thing, or I get more of what I thought I had to have, and yet there's this low level of dissatisfaction. Still, in this series, we're trying to talk about how do we use God's blessings in a way that satisfy us. Maybe you understand or you relate to it. You got the house, or you got the promotion, or you got the wife or the girlfriend or the boyfriend. You got to take the vacation you wanted. You got the new phone or the car, and yet the dissatisfaction remains. And I understand the problem. I always fall into the same trap. If I could just get more, it would take care of the satisfaction question. It never seems like it does. The old saying, just count up your blessings. You need to count your blessings. I count mine. It just reminds me of the blessings that I don't have yet. And it's not an old, when you think about it, like, is this just something that's in our culture? Is this just something that we deal with in our country? It's not. This is an old, old problem that a lot of people went through. And God has an answer for it. If you look in your notes, let me read it to you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. If you have old school notes, you can circle that. I'll make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. And that's the idea. That's the strategy. What God is saying is that I'll bless you, and you'll be able to enjoy those blessings, but they become satisfaction when you play them forward. God blesses us, and the idea is that we'll enjoy the blessing. But we come satisfied when we share the blessing. Now, here's the definition that we're using during this service and during this whole series. Blessing, using who I am and what I have to help people move closer to Jesus because they know he cares about them. And by the way, that's what makes people move closer to God. It's not by threatening them they're going to go to hell or there's going to be judgment come down on them or he's going to wreck their life or... Does it make people move closer to God? What moves closer to God is when they believe that he cares about them. He cares about forgiving them. He cares about guiding them. He cares about helping them with stress and hard problems and things that we're going through in our everyday life. When someone knows that God cares about me, that moves them closer. And what we're talking about is the double win is that blessings are to be enjoyed. But also when I use the blessing to help someone move closer to God, it brings satisfaction. Now we have this little analogy that we're using. We broke down the word bless and grab your note sheet. You can write it in. You take B-L-E-S-S. The first one is begin with prayer. And then write in the word listen, L. E stands for eat or food, having communion with someone, eating, hanging out. S is serve, and the last one is write the word share your story. Last week we talked about beginning with prayer. We used the B word, and the idea was just get God involved every day. Here was where we left it off last week. What if every person prayed to be a blessing? What if every day I just got up and said, God, whoever I am and whatever I have, just point out people, like show me how to be a blessing to people. Can you imagine? If a church or a group of people just acted like that, just started every day, said, let's do life together today, God. You know, anything that you've given me, anything that I am, all the gifts that you've brought into my life, show me who to bless today with those gifts. Now, today we're going to look at the next two letters, L and E, and a couple of stories that Jesus is in that talks about listening and eating. So here we go, write number one in your notes. Listen for what's really happening in people's lives. I'm going to read a story about it. It's in your notes. I'll read it to you. When Jesus was coming close to Jericho, a blind man sat beside the road. So he's sitting there, and the man heard the crowd walking by, and he asked what was happening. Some people told him that Jesus from Nazareth was passing by. So the blind man shouted, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. The people who were going along with Jesus told the man to be quiet, but he shouted even louder, son of David, have pity on me. Jesus stopped and told some people to bring the blind man over to him. Jesus asked, what do you want me to do for you? Lord, I want to see, he answered. Jesus replied, look and you will see. Your eyes are healed because of your faith. Now think about this story. If there was ever a situation that it seems obvious what somebody needs, and if there was ever a person that doesn't need to ask a question, it has to be Jesus because he already knows. And yet he does ask a question. Do you know, unless a person gets a chance to talk, they can never feel heard. If they don't have an opportunity to speak, they can never feel heard. And if there was ever a situation where, you know, you can size it up very, very quickly and say, well, it's obvious what this guy needs. He doesn't need to tell me. Or if there was ever a person that knows what's going on, and yet Jesus asks a question. We live in a community, a time, a country where there's not a ton of listening going on. There's lots of talking, but not a ton of listening. I mean, I know we jump on Facebook every single day and we roll through our feed and it feels like we're listening, but are we really listening? If you think about what's the opposite of listening, maybe the first thing that comes to mind was, well, not speaking. But what if it's this? What if the opposite of listening is waiting to speak? Have you ever been in a conversation and you felt like this is like the other person was just waiting for you to stop talking so they could talk? That's how they're not listening. Like, they're just waiting for you to stop talking so they can start talking. They're just listening for the volume to stop. The opposite of listening is just sort of waiting for my chance to talk. And Jesus really has a whole different way of being in this thing. And it does seem like if you're going to be able to listen to people, you'll have to say, well, even though it's obvious what they need, or even though I know what they need to hear, that's what's happening in the story here. In fact, here's a great idea about listening. If listening is going to happen, maybe the front end of listening is when I'm in a conversation, I'm committed to help you talk about what's really going on in your life. Maybe that's what Jesus is doing here. It's not that he already doesn't know, or it's not that it isn't obvious, or he knows what he's going to say. Maybe the whole start of listening is when I'm in the conversation, the place that I am, where I kind of hold myself, is I'm there to get you talking about what's really going on in your life, even if I think I know. And guilty of that one. I mean, I'm listening, thinking, gosh, I know what this person needs to say. And I'm not even Jesus. And I think I always know what someone needs to hear, my family or my wife or work or something. But here's the question, what if I'm wrong? What if I think I know what someone needs and I don't? There's this great story in this book about this group of volunteers. They go to India and they have tons and tons of resources and they arrive in this huge community. There's thousands of people and they're impoverished and they get there. And they get with the community leaders and they say, listen, what is it you need? Because we can build a hospital for you, a medical clinic. We can build a school for you. We can put housing in. And we have come prepared. And these community leaders say to them, we need a mailbox. And these volunteers, they kind of like, no, you don't understand. We could build you a hospital. We could put a school in. We can end non-education. We can put a medical, we can build houses. Like, what is it you need? And these community leaders tell them, we need a mailbox. Now here's the story. The guy writes, in India, if you live where there's no mailbox, then you do not exist. So even this large community was overlooked. Without a mailbox and being on a map, you don't count. They wanted to be put on a map. They wanted to be recognized. They wanted to have an identity. The volunteers would have never known that unless they asked a question and were willing to listen. Getting a mailbox was no small task. It took over 2 years of work through bureaucracy, but eventually this had a huge impact on the community. They wanted a mailbox. Now, how many times do I feel like I know exactly what it is somebody needs, but I never find out what they really need because they never really get a chance to talk? The French guy that invented the thesoscope We got an old picture of it there. It looks like a toilet paper roll, but that was the first one right there, the thesiscope. And he had a concern because he knew this was going to change completely how doctors were with patients. It was going to revolutionize the medical community. But he was concerned about something with it. And this is what he says when he's talking about it. He says to people, he says, if you use this tool, don't stop listening to your patients. They're telling you how to heal them. He was concerned that doctors would stop listening and they would miss some things. Now let me ask you a question. Who in your life needs to feel like they're heard? I'm not saying who do you need to listen to, I'm saying who in your life needs to feel like they've been heard. And if you could start by listening and just say, my job is to get them talking about their life, even if I know what they're gonna say, even though it's obvious what they need, even though I know what I'm already gonna tell them, could I suspend that? Because that's the story of Jesus. A blind man runs up to him. He doesn't jump to conclusions. He already knows, and he asks him a question to get him talking. Listen to what this one author says. Being listened to is so close to being loved that most people cannot tell the difference. And there it is. The end game. If I listen, somebody feels loved. And that's a blessing. Now, number two, writing your notes, eat with others on a regular basis. Another story about Jesus and community using food. So the first one ends with, who's in your life that needs to know you're listening? And listening is, I try to get them talking about what's going on in their life. Even though I might know already what they need to hear, even though it's obvious what's going on, that doesn't matter. I'm there to get them talking. What's going on in your life? Here's a courageous question. I'm going to just talk to all the husbands for a second because we probably struggle with this the most. Here's a courageous question, and I'm not so sure I want to do it, so I'm not saying I'm going to, but I'm going to put it out there that maybe do this. If you sat with your wife this afternoon or tomorrow or someday and just asked her this question, do you feel like I'm listening? Do you feel heard? That's a courageous question to ask, to get that kind of feedback. Because the goal is to get them talking so you can listen. That's what Jesus did. And that's a blessing. Why? Because they'll believe that you love them. But there's no better way to change a marriage than when two people feel like you love me. And when you feel like someone's listening, it feels like love. Last thing, do you see how Jesus is in this story? There's some people that never go to God because they don't think he's going to listen. They feel like, God's not going to listen to me. He already knows what he's going to do. He's already decided what he's going to do. He's got this whole thing planned out. He's not going to listen to me. God's goal is that you would feel like he loves you. And he understands that if you believe he'll listen, you will believe and feel like he loves you. So next question, who needs to go to God and just pour your heart out and let him convince you, I hear you? I hear you. Because his goal is you feel his love. That's what's in the story. That's why Jesus doesn't rush to conclusions. Before he ever does the healing, he wants this guy to know, I love you. He's probably been wondering all his life, why did God do this to me? Why did he leave me blind? I got to beg for a living. God, you don't care about me. Before it ever starts, Jesus listens, so he goes away. And before he ever is healed, he says, you do care about me. You do love me. Now, number two, in your notes, this idea of eating, let me read you this story. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Circle tax collectors and put in the word scoundrels. That's a good translation of that, bunch of scoundrels. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors, scoundrels, and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners. So this is this really cool story about Jesus and food and who gets to be with him. And I don't know what food is for you in your life, but in Jesus' day, if you were willing to eat with somebody, it was a sign of acceptance. It was a relational thing to be with somebody. It meant I'm willing to be seen with this guy. It was eating with someone and sharing a table with someone went beyond what we normally see food as today, which is just pleasure. And when I think of food, I think of pleasure. I want to eat what I want to eat. Or even medication. Like, I don't know if you ever medicate with food. I don't know why it is in my life. If I have a super, super stressful day, I just always stop at Mavericks and I get a bag of potato chips. And I don't know what it is about a bag of, you know, salt and vinegar potato chips or barbecue potato chips. My stressful day, my car knows where to go. I go right into Mavericks. I grab the chips. I know I shouldn't have it. Don't come tell me after church. I know they're bad for me. I don't care. Because they make me feel good. And I don't know, where's your go-to food? Do you have any restaurant you go to or some kind of food you eat? And when you don't feel good emotionally, something's going on, and you run to that food. In our culture, that's what food is now. Fast food, fast feel good. But in Jesus' day, entirely different. Food was about being around a table with people and letting everybody know, I like these people, I accept these people, I'm willing to be with these people. And I think it's this great picture of how God is with people, but the religious leaders don't like it. They get invited too, by the way. They're all with Jesus. And wouldn't it be great? I mean, this is such a great picture of what a church could look like or what God looks like. All the scoundrels, I was thinking about this week, that what a great picture of church. A whole big group of scoundrels and sinners gathered around Jesus being healed. Is that like a great picture of what church should be? All the scoundrels, all the sinners, everybody with a past, everybody with a screw-up, gathered around Jesus being healed. And the religious leaders, they don't like that. They're like, that's not what it's supposed to look like. You don't invite everybody. You've got to earn it. You've got to qualify to be with him. You don't invite those kind of people in here to be with. And Jesus tries to help them understand. He says, they got a whole different idea of what it is to be at the table and connected with God. Food was a way to connect. Being at the table was a way to connect. I had a friend that was an older Japanese man, and we're talking about his life and with his adult children. He always had trouble connecting with his kids and trying to connect with them as they got older. He loved his children, tried to connect with them, had difficulty, and he traced it back to something in his own family. In his life growing up, they had a traditional way that they celebrated their dinner, had their dinner together. So here's what it looked like in his life. His father, Japanese man, his father would eat at a separate table than the rest of the family. He told me about this. He traced down the disconnect with his children. He said, my dad always had a separate table in the kitchen, and the rest of the family would eat at another table in the dining room. My mom would come and serve my father his meal, and he ate in the kitchen at a separate table, every meal by himself, apart from the family, a sign of respect and authority. That's where he sat, and we all sat in the other room, and we took our meal there. And he felt like that added to this disconnect, because even though he loved his dad, he felt loved, he never felt he could approach his dad, because he wasn't allowed at that table. And that's what the religious leaders wanted the church to look like. God has his own table. That's where he sits. He has the authority and the purity, and he's the righteousness, and he follows. That God sits over there, and you don't get to go to that table. That's his table, and you eat at another place. See? And Jesus turns the whole thing upside down on his head. He said, everybody come and be around me, man. The table is open. One person, one author, they say it like this. People won't move spiritually until they're connected socially. In other words, the gospel will not be heard until our front doors open, our tables are set, and we practice the art of hospitality, celebration, and party. He takes it into a spiritual place and says he's going to move people closer to God. And this is the part of the talk that I want to kind of play my cards up front and be transparent. This is not easy for me. This is a difficult one for me. I am like fast food. You know, I don't see food as a way of connecting with people. Most of my meals I eat standing up watching ESPN. You know, that's how I do food. Food is a way to fuel up, take the stress off, eat my favorite food. I don't see food of being with anyone. I don't look at friendship and food or relationship and food. I don't process it that way. For whatever reason, food for me is like a gas station. You go in, you get the best gas you can afford, and you go. But I'm married to a world-class community builder. And I'm married to someone that has this completely different outlook on how to share meals and who should come around your house. So I thought they say a picture is worth a thousand words. I want to give you some backdrop. I had some unexpected money come in this summer. I never thought I was going to get it. I got this money, and you know how it is when you get unexpected money. I'm starting to think about how can I spend that money, and what do I want, and what am I going to do with this money? And all of a sudden, just as sure as can be, God says to me, and he does speak like this, give the money to your wife so she can buy a new dining room table. And I'm like, that can't be God. That's definitely not God. You know, so give the money to your wife. It just gets stronger and stronger. Give the money to your wife so she can buy a new dining. She's been talking for literally years about this huge dining room table. And the entire time she's been talking, it's like, I don't want any part of that. That's not my vision for how to have you. I brought you a picture. So finally I give the money to my wife, and she gets a custom made. She has a table made that's in my house right now. And I wanted to show you this is a great picture of what it's like in my life. So there's the tables. Can you see those? Now, the table I liked was over in the corner. That's a table for two. And really, just one person sat at that. That's our old table over in the corner. That was a table I liked. One person could sit there if they needed to. Maybe two people in a crunch could sit at that table. Now, look at the other table and behold my future. That 10, like 8 to 10 people can sit at that table. That's my wife's heart. A big table where lots of people can come around it. Of all these meals, and this is what Jesus knew. When you're sharing food, walls come down. It's a chance to talk and listen. People feel accepted when they're eating with you. They enjoy being together. They feel like you like them. The ground gets level. And Jesus knew all that. He was trying to give everybody this great picture of God. God's willing to have a meal with you. And we're invited to play it forward. Now, let me say something to you. Does it mean I'm going to have to change my schedule? Yes. Does it mean I'm going to have to spend money on food and menus that I don't normally spend? Yes. Does it mean I'm going to have to give up some of my free time, maybe go to bed a different time, get up a different time, do things different? Is there going to be changes in my life because I have a gargantuan table in my house now? Yes. Does it mean it's going to be worth it? Absolutely. Maybe not easy at first, but worth it. Here's all I'm asking. How would you start small to make food something that's not just about you? Because here's the bottom line, and write it in your notes. We must engage with people to bless them. And here's how Jesus said it. People don't hide a lamp under a bowl, they put it on a lampstand. Then the light shines for everyone in the house. In the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. Listening is about getting other people to talk. Food is more than just fueling up. And that blesses people. All right, so let's stand up together. And if you'd be kind enough, maybe bow your head. During the talk today, we're talking about blessing. We're saying a blessing is using who I am or what I have to move people closer to God. Blessings are to be enjoyed. And so no doubt about that. But they bring satisfaction when they go beyond enjoyment. And they help someone move closer to God. When they know God cares about them, here's two ways that it happens. When people feel listened to, they feel loved. And it's a small step to God cares about me. when you eat with people and you accept them and you hang out and you enjoy a meal together and people believe that, gosh, you know, you want to be with me, they feel loved. And so let me say a prayer this week as we go forward, Lord, and just be practical in our everyday life. It's super, super spiritual to just ask a question. Someone says, I want to be really, really spiritual. Well, Lord, just help us ask a question. It's not anything more than that. Just share one meal with someone this week, even a fast food, or do something a little bit different. Those are really spiritual things that cause people to move closer to you. Lord, let us be more than, you know, people that enjoy our blessings. Let us be people that are satisfied with our blessings because we're playing them forward into other people's lives, helping them move closer to you. They know you care about them. We're glad you care about us, Jesus, in your name. Amen. Have a fantastic week. We'll see you next Sunday.